The following podcast is recorded and produced by the Podcast Precinct in affiliation with the network at bicbp-radio.com. The Podcast Precinct. Consistency, creativity, culture.
Welcome back to the Starry Night Theater podcast. I'm your host, Alex.
I'm your other host, DJ. And today we have a very special guest on, our very own music director, Taylor. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everybody. Ooh. Thanks for having me.
Second time on. First time solo, though, so I'm excited to get into it.
Wow, there you go. It's all on you.
Oh, great. The amount of pressure that I feel right now.
All right, let's get into beef, veggie, and then we'll talk... music. Who wants to go first?
I'll go with beef. My beef is I woke up this morning with another pinched nerve in my back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is not fun.
It's not. I felt it coming for a couple days, but I was like, no, it's not here. It's not happening. And then I just like moved to get up. We have to count how many times I talk about my back problems.
Yeah. I have a back problem. Recently, and I don't know what it's from, but it like my lower back is just killer.
Like feels very stressed.
No, it's like I stretch every morning. So like when I go to
oh my goodness, you are dedicated.
Yeah. When I go to touch like the floor, it hurts. It hurts real bad. And like when I do certain things, like my lower back is just kind of toast.
Maybe we want to get that checked out.
Yeah.
Hold on, wait. What are you turning this year? Because that's he's not, my
no,
pains.
He's not reached that point yet where he should be having these issues.
Well, I'm sure it's like, you know, the 900-pound cross that we lift up. I'm sure that doesn't help. I'm sure lifting stuff at crew and work constantly is not helping the situation.
You need a belt around your back.
Yeah.
That's so funny because your dad's note about... lift the cross so it's so heavy.
Yes.
And you're like, yeah, now we got this 800-pound cross here. My back's feeling weird somehow. I don't know the connection.
The initial lift, it used to just be on me because I could get my fingers under. But like now Bill gets to it first, so he lifts it first. I'm like, okay, you take the back strain, man. That's all
Let
right.
Bill do that.
Yeah, I feel like
I mean, he's built. Yeah, he's built for like it. For sure. I'm not. Yeah.
Yeah, so now I'm like, oh, I got to carry the shield, which, like, the shield is light, but then when you're holding it for a while, it gets heavy. I have a bruise on my wrist, and then I'm just like, I can't really, like, I don't want to look down, so when they're, like, pushing me, I got to be careful.
See, I feel next time we need to prepare everybody and make them all go out LARPing for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Build those muscles for those shields.
Hey, the Renaissance Fair is happening.
Oh, I was there.
No,
I know.
No.
Oh, we will. We can get into that. That could be my veggies. So.
Oh my god.
Oh no. That could be my beef. We'll just get into that.
Oh my god.
I don't like. Okay. I was kind of talking about this, and people don't understand it. I love going to a theater, and like you're separate. Like I'm the audience. You guys are on stage doing your thing. I love to watch it from the comfort of my seat. I'm not involved. But like you go to Disney or you go to like a Renaissance thing and like people are acting around you and like, no, I'm me. I'm me. Like we went to the dinner mystery thing.
Yeah, I love
murder
those.
Mystery. Yeah. And I thought it would be worse, but it was fun. Like I enjoyed myself. But when you first walk in and they're like, hey, what's going on? It's like, oh, stop. Stop, man. I'm me, bro. Like, you know me.
And you know them, and you're
like... Yeah, and you're like, stop, man. Come on. But, like, that stuff, I can't deal with it. Like, I went to Cleveland, and we went to a haunted house restaurant, And there was a Michael Myers walking around. So I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, I love that. But then he came over and he like grabbed my phone and he starts touching me. I'm like,
hold on. Why would Michael Myers do that? That seems very out of character for him.
It was definitely out of character.
That's the thing that throws me with this. Like the walking around, awesome, lurk.
Yes.
But the moment that he goes for the technology, I'm like, I'm taken out.
He took a selfie with all
of us. Wait. So you're telling me that Michael Myers knows how to take selfies canonically in this restaurant?
In this restaurant. That's how it goes.
There we have it.
There it is, folks. The questions you needed answers to, there they are.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine being someone who acts in like a murder mystery thing and then seeing people I know and being able to stay in character. I don't know. Like, I can't imagine seeing you and being like, yeah.
Right.
Staying in character.
Now I want to see this. Just or like, to know how we will react.
Like a Disney princess or something. Like, they come up to you like, stop. Stop. I get you're getting paid for this. That's fantastic. But, like, you don't have to act around me.
Good for them, though, because I couldn't do that.
Oh, no. The inner child in me is like, yeah, I'd like to say hi to a princess.
It's just, like, I don't know. Because then, like, what do you do? I don't know what to do with my body.
You
I don't
say,
know what to do with my words.
Hello, Your Majesty. Thank you for gracing your presence with at our table.
I could never.
You
I
just
could never.
Stay quiet and take a picture.
No, that's what I just stay quiet. I'm like,
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that you can't interact with the actors that are
you
playing the character and speaking, but you're totally cool for the ones that stay silent and do, like, the miming thing.
Yeah.
So, like, Mickey Mouse,
yes.
Woody, we're good with those.
That's good. That's all good, because it's like, okay, great. You're not coming up to me and having a conversation about your castle or something, because I'm like, stop, bro. Like, it's too far, I think. But, like, I love being on stage and, like, acting like somebody else with somebody else. Because, like, all right, I'm not me. I'm removed from me. But when I'm me and somebody's acting towards me, it's like, no, stop.
I love
crazy.
That. I eat that stuff
that,
up.
Oh, my God.
Because I love cringy things.
Yeah.
That is something I'm very passionate about. I love when movies are so bad that people will walk out of theaters. I will stay there because I love the awkwardness it creates and also like the crunch of it. But when it comes to like the interaction of people at these live places, it's cringy, but you lean into it, and it's for me more of an escape of I can let go of whatever I'm doing. There's no real consequence here because whatever, respectfully, you know, but like
right.
whatever I do, there's probably somebody out there who's done something crazier and they have a story about that. I will put on the worst accent and they'll be like, you know what? This person's trying. And if I'm walking into the Renaissance Fair, that whole place is the stage. And I am there for it. Because often the interactions you have, not with the actors, surprise, it's just some random guy who's coming over and talking to you. And you just go with it.
I would shut down. I would be a shell of a man in a Renaissance Fair, festival, whatever you call it.
I think you should LARP.
No. I couldn't.
Okay, so I had a lot of friends in college that did Amp Guard, which is LARPing, but it has different rules than other LARP does. While they were doing that, prepare for your lives to change and how you view me. Me and my friends started doing a supernatural theme LARP. where we came up with a plot of what was happening, and like instead of like LARPing for a medieval time, we would go out and be like, all right, we're LARPing today and there's a Wendigo that we got to find. Weird, you know, college is a weird time. I also was the Quidditch captain at one point and vice president of the Sci-Fi Fantasy Club. So
you're very into this.
Oh yeah. And I was also in Comic Book Club, which was a whole other thing.
Now that's awesome.
It was. Oh, here's my shout out. Shout out to Bill from Hot Ones, because cameraman Bill went to college with him. He was he was in Comic Book Club with me. He recommended a few comics. His favorite comic is Blankets, which is an incredibly depressing graphic novel about a breakup and how tragic it can be. Great read. Definitely recommend it. 10 out of 10. But one of my favorite moments that I had in Comic Book Club was at the very beginning of the year to welcome new people. in, you go around the room and you tell people what your favorite comic is. And at this point, I was in the club since freshman year, and I was a senior, so I didn't know much about comics when I came in, and I just sort of found my own path about what I liked. Turns out I liked Dark Horse because it was shorter series, shorter stories, and it was standalone, so I didn't have to read a whole lot.
Yeah.
So when they got to me, Bill's like, "Oh, Taylor, good to see you back. What's your favorite comic?" And I go, "Mouse." And for those of you who don't know, Mouse is a graphic novel about the Holocaust.
Oh, wow.
So immediately after I say that, Bill's up there smiling and laughing, and then he goes, "Oh, shit." And the room got real quiet, and I'm like, "Hi, everybody." And then they move on to the next one. Absolutely recommend this graphic novel. If you have not read it, it is incredibly moving. And it's just beautiful the way that it was done. So definitely recommend that one. Anyway, back to LARPing. DJ, you should do it.
No, I can't. I just couldn't. Like, it's not in me. But, like, I'm not hating on anyone who does it. Like, go crazy. It's just, I'm not built for it. Not built.
Yeah. I would love to, but I can't. That's just not me.
I just can't get in the mindset of I don't know. It just, I shut down. Like, I genuinely just shut down. I'm like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like with anything, it's a take practice sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But. What about you? What's your beef?
Okay, so going from that, I have such an adult beef. My beef right now is weeds in my lawn.
That's an Alex beef.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's something I would say.
But it's specifically not even like the weeds. It is the small sprouts of trees that are popping up because my next door neighbor, who is this wonderful, kind, really blind old lady.
Oh.
She has this one tree that drops the seeds, yep, and it gets in my lawn, which is totally fine. And you don't notice it unless I don't mow for consistently every week. And I'm at the point now, because I've been at the show, that I haven't mowed. So I have literal little trees that are now almost to the point where it's like a foot tall.
Oh, wow.
Sprouting up in my yard, which is, you know, it's a thing. But then I also have cats that walk through my yard and stray cats in the neighborhood, so I don't want to spray it with any pesticides, so I'm thrown there. And then I have my other neighbor, which he doesn't know this, but we have such a big beef. Because he consistently will mow a huge chunk of my lawn, but then not do the rest. So he'll go so far onto my front lawn, where it's almost at my bay window at the front, or my first window, and then leave the rest of my lawn to look like crap just because he doesn't want his lawn to look bad in comparison, so he mows so far into mine. You know, it's a little crazy. It's a weird beef. If anybody who knows me and has heard the story, they know that there's so much more into it, where it's the point where I go to my grandma's house on Sundays and she's like, "So what's the lawn situation?" And I have to give her the updates. Like, the last update was I paid money for Mosquito Joe, and the dude took the stakes out where my property line was, so that way he can mow into my property even further.
What the hell?
I know. Bizarre. But no, my beef right now are with little weeds popping up in the trees. Wow. So
I support that. I could keep going with weed beef.
I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm thinking about just killing my whole back lawn and replanting it with like some Kentucky bluegrass or something. That way, like, all the weeds are gone. Mm. And then it has grass that won't grow as high, and I'm really thinking about that, but I have other things I have to fix in my house first.
Yeah, I feel like I just want to get like fake grass and just leave it out.
Oh my god,
I can't get with mowing a lawn every week. I can't do it.
Do you like walking on grass?
No.
Okay, then that's perfect for you then, because if you get the fake stuff, it'll burn your feet.
Okay, so I guess this kind of segues into the show. I don't wear open-toed shoes. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly wearing socks. I've never once enjoyed the feeling of having my feet touch ground or grass. It's just not for me. And so in the show, I wear these heinous, horrible, horrible canvas shoes because it's a principal thing.
So listeners, what I got from that is that DJ won't touch grass.
I love rolling in grass. I love doing everything except I've always been weird about my feet. I don't know why.
Yeah, I used to be more so. I mean, now, like, yeah, sometimes I'm like, I'd rather wear like sandals with socks like, sometimes, but like as I am.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at your feet now. You're wearing the sandals with the socks.
Yeah. But like for the show, I mean, I'll still wear them without socks too. I don't know. I used to be like that though.
No, when summer's out, I do almost exclusively sandals. And that's just because like I don't like my feet as restricted. Like socks, people always talk about how Bombas are such great socks. I hate them.
I've never worn them.
They cut in too much. They squeeze my foot too much, which apparently makes them comfortable. But for somebody who has very bad arch support like me, who needs those type of socks but refuses to use them, it's just, it doesn't does it. It doesn't do it.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I love socks. I have socks in my car. Like, this is a big thing. I'm not wearing socks with these shoes because, like, you can't. So, like, that's a big step for me. I've never done that.
Do you wear socks to bed?
No. Like, that's okay. So, like, when I'm sleeping, yeah, socks come off. But, like, I'm not moving. I'm just sleeping. As soon as I wake up, the first thing I do is put my socks on. It's got to be like a mental trauma thing that goes way back. I don't know. But, like,
someone did something
like,
to you.
Well, I feel like a lot of people, like, when I was, like, a child, would probably, like, tickle my feet and it probably, like, traumatized me to the point where I just
have
to wear socks.
So you're protecting yourself with your socks.
I might be. I might be when it goes
back. DJ, you wear those socks. You wear those sneakers on. I'm not even mad about the sneakers on stage anymore.
Yeah, I made the choice. And it was hilarious because Lucas came in, or Jesus, Lucas, and he goes, no. Like, what are those, man? What? And he's like, I'm not even like doing the joke anymore.
What,
like,
are,
dude,
those?
What are those? Like, seriously, what are they? And I'm like, dude, this is what I'm wearing. And the concern in his face and his voice was like,
wait,
you can't.
The canvas shoes or the boots?
The canvas shoes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, they look so much better than the boots though.
He was like, no, you can't do, no, please. And I was like, buddy, I'm wearing them. I'm sorry.
Jesus, please forgive me for this sin that I'm about to do. I'm going to go on stage with some canvas shoes on.
It was just so, and it's like every time, like before I go on stage, like I point them out to him. He's like, no, man, no. And they're horrible. I can't stand them, but I don't wear sandals.
Who told you couldn't wear your other boots?
Taylor and my mom.
I didn't fight it. I'm like, I get sandals. And he's like, no, I'll wear boots. I'm like, all right. And then his mom said something, which it kind of like reaffirmed me in that moment. I heard them like over on the side while everybody's getting notes. And I'm just kind of laughing and nodding to myself and be like, hey, I knew it.
Well, my sister laughed because she came and saw the preview that my mom did. And she's like, yeah, I think it's like an Easter egg for people who know you because they know you're not going to wear sandals. So like, what is he wearing on his feet?
Yeah, when I came back from my trip, I was talking to Cal about what we do as the guards. And I was like, okay, so what type of shoes are we wearing? Are we wearing sandals? Are we wearing sneakers? And he's like, well, we're wearing sandals, but DJ, on the other hand. And I was like, you don't have to say anymore. I knew he wasn't going to wear sandals.
I don't know what it is. It's like a deep mental cave.
No, it's special.
I mean, feet are weird.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people don't like feet.
Oh,
I know.
That's
true,
though.
Weird.
Like, there's, I feel like, as so many things, there's a spectrum of.
Yes.
Feet is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
That has come to light in, like, the past 10 years publicly, really more so. Because, like, growing up, I'm used to the people hating feet thing.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'll just leave that at that, listeners.
Well, yeah, now. Now it's a whole different thing. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
And, like, I don't care what other people do with their feet. Like, you can wear sandals all day if you want, wear them in the winter. I'm just more thinking, like, okay, but mine are not out.
Oh, this will drive you crazy. So, back to college, there's this one kid that was in Nerf Club with me. Yeah, I forgot to mention that club, too.
That's awesome. I like that club.
Who notoriously would go around campus barefoot.
That would drive me crazy.
In snow, I saw him barefoot walk into class. Like, the only times I ever saw him, like, with shoes on was if the snow was so deep, he had to have them on, or if he was on stage playing his violin. There was no other, like, between. He was always without shoes.
That makes me extraordinarily uncomfortable. Like, I'm very, I feel like somebody's LARPing in front of me right now. That's how uncomfortable that made me. Like, I can't even wrap my mind around
I don't
that.
Know why my mind went to a juggler LARPing.
A barefoot juggler LARPer? Oh my God, it's over. It's over. That's my nightmare.
So, have you ever considered doing the show Pippin?
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's my nightmare right there. Oh, that's horrible.
Come on, we can get the high top feel going. You got medieval stuff.
Oh my God, I hate that. I can't wait. Bring winter back. Now I'm just
no.
Uncomfortable. Yeah, or fall. I love a boot. I love wearing boots.
Are you rocking the white girl Han Solo look with the boots, the like black pants, and then the oversized shirt?
Yes. I do. I do rock that. Right I do on. Wear that quite a bit. I want to invest in more boots. I'm a boot guy. And do you tuck your pant into the boot? Do you put your pants over the boot? I don't
Ooh,
know.
Depends on the boot and depends on the pant. The
yeah, depends
My
on what you can fit
short.
In the boot.
Mm. Yeah, I got to get some taller boots.
Yeah,
got to cuff those
cowboy
jeans.
Boots.
Cuff the jeans? No, no, no. No.
Now that is just out of line. How dare you?
Out of line. If I lived in the South, I would want to fully commit to a cowboy lifestyle. I would be wearing the cowboy boots and the cowboy hat constantly.
Hey, DJ, that's just LARPing.
No. No, 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 no. That's like, that's just, that, I don't know. I would go full into it, but I wouldn't pretend I was a cowboy. I'm like, no, I know
you
I'm not a cowboy.
You would be the cowboy.
I just want to dress like, and like the denim jacket, denim on denim, big fan of that. I'd be rocking the denim, the cowboy boots, and the cowboy
the old
hat.
Little Canadian tuxedo, eh?
Yep. Yep.
All right.
All right. Our veggies are something good. This one I got to really think about. It's a head scratcher.
Bueller.
Yeah.
I had one going in, but my mind went completely blank. Like, I
remember my
week. You know what? I got my veggie right here.
Okay.
Growth. So my veggie is that I left teaching, which was like a big step for me. And somehow everything in my life just fell in place afterwards. And I think it's because of like the whole turning 30 thing. People talk about how once you turn 30, like it's cake. It's easy. You know who you are. You haven't heard that?
Oh, yeah. No, oh. I've heard it. I haven't reached that point yet.
But like I feel like I've gotten so comfortable in who I am. This year from the growth of it and the new experiences that I've had. I had a new job. I got to go back into directing, which was something that I've wanted to do. But grown in a different way that my directing style is very different than what it used to be too. So my veggie is grow out there.
Well, it's like your
Try
Saturn return.
It could be Saturn return.
Where I feel like I'm
what does that mean?
Somewhat still in it. Like some... It's like a turning point in your life. Like some big thing happens or even if it's not too big, it's like it shifts something within you.
Is this astrology?
Yes.
Yeah.
From my understanding of it,
Christ.
It has to do with like what things align at certain points of your life and that because the planets go, what is it? Not, oh my God, it's not rotate. No, yeah, it's rotate. Because revolve is the other one. Rotate around the sun at a certain rate that when they reach that point, it has some sort of effect on your life as well. So when Saturn returns, which I think is the 30-year rotation.
Yeah.
So that's why.
That's why you feel like a shift.
A shift.
Which I feel that. That happened when I was like 27. And what?
I'm like, no. I don't have
eyes.
Anything deep in there. I'm like, I'm a little weird. Like, that's 3 years early.
Yeah, well, no, there's like a timeline. Like, it's not exactly on 30. It's like around.
Oh,
and there's different ones. There's like 21 or something, then 27 to 30.
That makes no sense because wouldn't I feel you're 30?
No, you were not born yet. So you were not born to experience that Saturn.
Yeah, it's not happening to you yet.
No. It was what in the sky when you were birth. Okay, so there's an app you can get called, I believe it's CoStar, where you put in your birthday, your time of birth, and all that, and it will give you your astrological signs along with like what you're rising.
He doesn't want it. He doesn't care.
No. Okay.
My aunt does the whole birth chart and can read the charts. I I personally
that's too much work for me.
Like it. I enjoy astrology. Do I base my whole life around
no.
it? No.
But when you see, I've heard before, like if you do astrology, you don't look at your horoscope in the morning. You look at it at night, because then you look at it and see like, oh, what actually happened, and reflect on the day.
Mm.
So you don't use it as a guidance. You use it as a reflection.
Got it. Yeah. I don't even look at my horoscope every day. It's just, but I'm interested in how it all affects you. You don't believe in it. I believe in it somewhat. I don't think
the
it like
look.
Yeah. It's just like, what, why are we talking about this?
I like to like read the fun things that are like, oh, you're a Taurus, you're stubborn, you're yeah. this and that. And like, yeah, that all fits. That's fun. Like that stuff's fun.
Yeah.
But
it's
like
fun.
Beyond that, I don't.
The biggest thing about this is that it gives us an excuse for something. As humans, we need patterns, we need excuses. I'm gonna take that excuse that my Saturn's returned.
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing if I'm doing tarot. Like, I want that excuse there on the cards, on the table for me. Be like, oh, that's why I was a bitch this week.
Yeah.
It's very clear.
It wasn't me.
Yeah, it gives you
it was written in the stars.
It was in the
it
stars.
It gives you perspective. Like,
what do you mean perspective?
I don't take it seriously where I'm like reading these cards and think like exactly what happened. Like, take it for...
Hold up.
What?
So, my grandmother on my father's side... There was a whole other thing there, though. But, like, her mother would do tarot every single day. Every day, without doubt. Until one day, she saw her death in the cards, and she stopped.
Mm.
A week later, yeah. She passed.
Wow.
Whoa.
Right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, but that's why I don't want to get that deep. I don't want to know that stuff.
No, too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. But, like, I don't know. Whatever. If it's real, it's real. If it's not, it's not. But
well, if people start putting blame on that, like they read cards or something, and then they're like you said, that's why, and they don't take accountability for their actions.
Oh, okay,
that's
hold
one
on.
Thing.
That's my real beef. Accountability. Take accountability, people. Like actions have consequences. That's all.
That's real.
Sorry, Alex. I came in really aggressively with that one.
No, that's fine.
That's a great beef, though. That's a universal beef.
Like, there's too much. Like, I taught for nearly 10 years. I left at 8 years fully employed as a teacher. I had 1 year under my belt with student teaching and subbing. And my biggest takeaway from that is kids are losing fear, which is bad for us. They're getting too comfortable.
That's
you
true.
Need a little bit of fear to keep you safe. You
Dude,
need a little bit of fear.
Can they take
to grow.
Some of mine? I have too much.
Uh-huh. And because of that, like the consequences, yes, we should have grace or whatever. That's important. But consequences are important, even more so. You got to learn that, because within the consequences, within feeling uncomfortable, that's where you grow. But we're losing that in some places.
I agree.
Yeah.
I feel like I know, yeah, more 20 and 30 year olds with fear and anxiety than any child. They're just like, you cannot do anything to me, and they will just do whatever they want to do. And it's like, I mean, you're right, I literally can't do anything to you. But
it's terrifying
sometimes. Yeah, that's true.
But also I'm a little envious in some places, but no,
mostly bad.
Mostly bad.
All right, whose veggie was that? I don't remember.
I did a veggie of growth.
Yeah,
a veggie of growth.
Yeah. On YouTube.
Okay, I can go. My veggie is also growth.
Oh, come on. No. Mine will be growth too.
No. Mine is
not like those weeds growing in my lawn though.
mine is throughout the show though. So like we talked about earlier, like this show is not my favorite, and I have not been secretive about that. I've been very honest on the podcast to everyone I talk to. It's just not my favorite show, but our actors are great, our performers are phenomenal. But I said that a big thing that I've taken from this is a growth that I've gotten with everyone, like relationship wise. Like I said, Taylor and I have grown closer, mm-hmm. and I'm excited to work with you in the future. And I've grown closer with Sean, Michaela, Trevor, Jenna, Lucas, who we didn't even know, and so many people
Shout
in the cast.
Lucas.
Yeah, he's a I met his parents yesterday. I'm like, I love him. Like, he's just an awesome human being.
You know what? I take that shout out back. He was supposed to introduce me to his mother, and he didn't.
He's off now. That's it. You're not part of this anymore.
We have understudies for a reason, you know.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, the growth I've had with relationships is something that I will take and always cherish, and that happened during this show. So I'll always be grateful for that. You know, Jared, everyone. I've grown a lot closer with a lot of them. And that's you can never turn your nose up at that.
That's a good one. My veggie is growth.
Tell us more.
I don't know. I don't have any growth. This week there was no growth. I'll just say I had a 3-day work week. That was pretty nice.
Oh, that's best.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was nice.
I was spoiled, and now I'm feeling it. So I left teaching to do private contracting for the government.
Wow.
I know, left field. And I was between contracts, so I just got off of a contract where I was working with the Navy, and now I'm on one with the Marines. But between that, I had a lull where I was doing nothing. I was doing like some side work on a Pennsylvania education contract, but I was enjoying those 3-day work weeks, and the days that I did work, it was maybe for like 20 minutes.
What?
Oh, yeah. But they didn't know. And they never will know, because nobody knows where I actually work.
Nobody knows.
I hope this doesn't come up in my background check.
This podcast reaches.
We have to we won't put your name as the episode name. Mystery guest. We don't know who this person is.
Oh, my God. Nope. Are all your contracts education related?
No. So it was really interesting how I got into this position. So I left my last job basically over $500 because they wouldn't give me a $500 raise. I wanted to get to a certain pay by a certain age. And I was definitely contributing to the school that it absolutely could have been justified, especially the amount of overtime that I worked for them. And they came back, I'm sorry, we can give you $250 more.
Oh, wow. That's not even
which
close.
To me was like the biggest middle finger. You were losing staff left and right. We all know we're in a teacher shortage. I am a specialist. I was a music educator who was certified to teach kindergarten through 12th grade instruments, voice, like everything. And like, I couldn't get over the $250 comment. So I signed my contract. Then it was the week of my birthday. The Monday I went in, I put in my notice. So I quit. The next day, I went to Canisius, picked up my degree for my master's in special education. That Friday, I went to the Finger Lakes for my birthday. And then that Saturday, while I'm on a wine tour, I get a phone call from a company that I worked for in the past where I was doing curriculum alignment for music and other specialties. So I was doing it for art, gym, music, dance, library, all those sort of speds. And they're like, hey, we're looking to create a subsect of this company that focuses on government contracts. We remembered you.
Wow.
And it also helped that my mom is HR. I think that was part of it.
Okay.
But they didn't know that I quit. She didn't tell anybody. Like, I had savings saved up. I was going to interviews for other teaching gigs and canceling those interviews because I was starting to have panic attacks going in. That's a whole thing. We'll get into that later because that has to tie back with me doing music directing. Anyway, so I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. It's part time. It was more money part time than it was me working full time teaching. I'd have to pay for my own insurance and other stuff, but like, I'm used to living on a budget. I kept working there for a month. They liked my work so much, they put me on full time, and now I'm here. So
that's awesome.
It was very much a universe aligned.
Yeah,
perfectly.
They're definitely telling you something.
Like, I know. And it was funny because the day that they asked me to go full time and I was negotiating that contract, I got a phone call from another place that I applied to that was offering me a job. And I turned that down and stuck with what I was doing instead, which has worked out very nicely with me. So. And now I'm learning some other things that I didn't think I would ever learn.
Like what?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Were you the person that like went on an interview that was fake or something? Some like last year there was a company. It was like Sheridan on Sheridan or something.
No, that wasn't me.
Was that?
Was it Casey? Because I feel like I remember having that conversation with you, Taylor. Like with you in the room, at least.
Yeah.
Might have been Casey.
It might have been Casey.
I really don't think it was me. And if it was me, I signed an NDA. It wasn't.
No, you would have remembered. So yeah, it might have been Casey.
That's wild. Maybe that is some kind of alignment.
It is in the stars. It's
like on my birthday, it all just happened.
That's awesome.
The best birthday gift was the shift in my life, and then after that, other things just fell into place.
That's awesome. Good for you. All right. Well, I think we're done with all that. We can move on to
the
theater stuff. The actual. It's so early, and I'm so tired.
I had to wake up at 5:45 to drive Mustafa to the airport.
God.
Yeah. I mean, I went back and slept, but like I didn't have good sleep from midnight to 5 a.m.
That stinks.
Yeah.
Sleep's important. I told the cast, you got to sleep.
I like sleeping alone in my own bed.
See, that's a girl thing. It's got to be a girl thing.
Why? You like sleeping with a partner?
Yes. Like I mean, I could sleep anywhere. Genuinely, I could sleep anywhere.
But you prefer that to sleeping alone?
Yeah.
I have mixed days.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I don't want to sleep next to Mustafa ever. But
when it's hot out and it's 90 degrees.
Yeah. Like a bigger bed, that'd be nice.
Mm-hmm. I know we're going to get to the musical stuff, but shout out my blanket that I just got. Because it is, it's a cooling blanket.
I have a heating blanket.
Oh, no. Like, I will sit on my bed and immediately feels cooler. Like,
Amazon.
It's a waffle knit blanket, but it's specifically. No snacks in bed. But.
Now I'm in.
It's a waffle knit blanket that is designed so air flows through it and it cools it. It is a cooling blanket. Absolutely recommend. It's the best thing ever. I'm waking up now and turning off my fan.
Wow.
I know.
I got to get
that. I'm intrigued.
I love blankets, so I got to add that one.
Oh, isn't that just one of the joys of life? Shout out blankets.
That's real.
That's a veggie right there.
Not a heated blanket, though. A heated blanket, I think, is one of the worst creations ever. Because I've never in my life been so cold that I needed
more
heat from
it. I mean, I didn't buy it, so.
It's absurd.
I was gifted it, so I didn't spend money on it, but no, it's great. But during the winter? No.
A hot blanket out of the dryer?
No, that's different, because that's natural. But like constant heat
flow. Yeah, but it doesn't last.
Beating on me. Yeah, I don't want it to last.
I do.
There's a point after you're cold, you come in, you're under the blanket, you're like, okay, now I'm comfortable. I don't need more heat.
Yeah, so you just turn it off and move on.
No.
I see both sides of this argument. I do.
I hate a heated blanket. I hate it. It's not for me. Even when I'm sick or not sick, at any point in my life, there's never been a time where I'm like, I need more heat from this blanket.
No, I like being toasty.
That's disgusting to me. It's
One
disgusting.
Blanket I will say we're going to shout out is the blanket that Michaela puts on Jesus in
shout
Jesus,
out.
Christ.
Jesus
Superstar.
Christ Superstar.
There we go.
Blanket. You definitely don't need a blanket today. We're toasting in the 90s.
Wait, what about weighted blankets?
No.
I see their purpose. I got one. It didn't do it for me.
It didn't do it for me either.
Okay. But you know what? Like, people who are, like, super anxious, I could see it working for them.
I can also see it making them more anxious.
Oh, yeah. That's what happened to me. I felt too constricted, which was very weird. But, yeah.
It would just make me mad. Because I can't move. I'm a mover and shaker when I'm sleeping. Like, I shake my butt to fall asleep every night. Every night I'm shaking my butt. And you know why? This one I actually know why. I know the trauma behind it. My mom used to rock me constantly, and then I'd fall asleep. And, like, my mom loved to rock me. So, like, that's why I fall asleep in cars. That's why I have to shake my butt to go to sleep.
Hold on. I have a solution for this.
Okay.
Ditch the bed. Get a hammock.
That'd be kind of awesome.
Right?
That'd be kind of awesome, yeah. Like, you can't do a two-person hammock, I feel. So, like,
they have two
eventually.
People.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but, like, then there's no escape. Like, you're just on top of each other.
Well, your partner also has to be, like, on board with the whole hammock thing.
Yeah, but
literally.
You know those baby shaker, those chairs, the shakers? Get an adult one.
If I had one of those, you would catch me getting the best Z's in my life. That's a dream.
So a director gift for you would be a life-sized baby yes. rocker. Or not life-size, but adult size.
That would be amazing. I always shake when I sleep, and everybody notices it. Like, sleepovers, that used to be the big thing. Like, can you just not shake? Like, I'm twerking to go to sleep. all right, enough of that. Jesus Christ Superstar is happening. We just had our first weekend. We're going to a show straight after this. How do you feel? How do you feel about this?
I feel great. I feel really good. I think that the cast has put in some really good work, and that they're just such a skilled cast, and yeah. they know where they excel, that we see it. Yes. I think that, like, DJ has been very vocal about his not dislike of the show, but disinterest.
Not like.
I wasn't going to audition for this show. So before being asked to music direct, everybody's backstage at Treasure Island be like, oh, Jesus Christ Superstar, Jesus Christ Superstar. And I'm like, eh. Because I judge a show based on its ensemble numbers, and none of the ensemble numbers really grasped me, because it is, when you look at the writing of the music of it, What's the Buzz is basically loops. You get the same theme over and over again. So once you learn the first chord, you have the whole song down. There is one shift that you feel, but the listener doesn't really notice it too much. And then it's the same thing for reoccurring parts of the show. It is the reoccurring themes and reoccurring musical ideas that come back and come back that are in the ensemble, and it repeats and repeats. And like, I like a little bit of juxtaposition in my music. That's why I'm so drawn to Sondheim, because he does such a fantastic job, not only musically making it melodically interesting, but also the rhythms and the time signatures that he decides to jump through. Granted, Jesus Christ Superstar has some very interesting time signatures. At one point, we're going into 7/8. I'm sorry if I'm getting too deep here, but
you're good. I don't understand a word you're saying, but I love it.
So instead of feeling like the normal four beats in a measure, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, you get 7 beats crammed into a measure. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It changes the way you feel the music. So we get some of that. And when that happens, I'm all in for that music. So we see it in Pontius.
Yes.
Whenever he's on stage, we see it. Basically only when Pontius is on stage. We get a little, we get it in a few of Mary Magdalene's songs, which may be why I'm more drawn to those songs and that music. But it is, the musicians do such a good job at making sure that we still feel that meter and still feel those time signatures. So that's been really good.
Yeah.
I definitely think that the show has had some unexpected challenges.
Yep.
And unfortunately, like, well, not unfortunately, but fortunately for you, unfortunately for me, I had to show that I am skilled in other areas as well.
Yeah.
So I had to take up some costuming that I wasn't anticipating doing. And I love costuming. This goes back to my love for the Ren Faire. I make my costumes for the Ren Faire. That's part of the reason why I love going. I always have an element of my garb that I have personally made. So it was nice being able to flex those muscles again, too. But going in, way back for Sweeney, I went in to these productions with us as I am joining a theater company that nobody knows me. I know nobody knows me. I have a connection here that's through a friend who happens to be your cousin's wife.
Yes.
And I'm like, this is great. I just want to act. I just want to do shows and be in them. And very slowly, DJ ruined that for me, because within, I think it was the second week of rehearsal, something came up where Sean, our music director at the time, wasn't able to be there. And he points at me. It's like, you conduct. I'm like, okay. So I was easily spotted out there, and it grew to this, which was a wonderful opportunity for me to get back into directing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We knew immediately that, like, from your audition, we're like, oh, like, she's smart and, like, could do this. So, like, it was genuinely from day one. You just have, like, a presence that's like, okay, like, she knows what she's doing. And yeah, so like Sean was like, so if I'm not here, like Taylor could pick it up. And we didn't know you.
So that audition, I left feeling so bad and kind of cussing myself, because I have gone to auditions where there has been pianists, and I know like it can be hit and miss with an accompanist.
Yeah.
And I came with music from the show. I did, what was it? Easy Now, Hustlers, Hush, Don't Distress Yourself, What's Your Rush? That one from Sweeney, which nobody else auditioned with, and Sean hadn't played yet. And I'm like, crap. Why did I choose this song? Because it's very timely, but also hard to play because it's Sondheim. So when he's playing it, I'm like, oh, he's playing it at a slower tempo. He's trying to figure out the notes here because it's a weird song to play. At one point, I made a mental decision where I'm like, all right, I'm leaving him in the dust. Whatever he plays underneath me, he plays underneath me. I'm just going forward at my tempo that I need to do.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that was a mental decision I left. I'm like, I knew that too. I should have just brought a track. Because I've had that happen before where I choose the weird song that nobody else is going to sing. Because I'm like, I'm going to do a weird song so I stand out in a different way. Which you shouldn't do.
Hey, but it sort of worked out.
Yeah.
Now, how does that work? Like, he's playing at a different tempo and you're just singing. Like, how does it sound?
Well, it's Sondheim, so it doesn't sound beautiful to begin
with. No. No, that song is probably less noticeable because it's Sondheim, but normally you would feel it and you could hear it.
Yeah.
The general rule when it comes to performing, that if you're a vocalist and you have an accompaniment, is that you lead the tempo, you lead the voice. So anytime that you have a good accompanist, they listen to you and they make sure that they follow you. However, inexperienced singers are used to the other way around, because if you're in music class, typically you have the music teacher who's playing the piano and you're singing with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it all just depends on who has the power of guiding the song. So that's like an easy way for me to identify like who has different types of training just from an audition. So I am not a pianist. I refuse to accompany for auditions because that is a whole different thing than being a pianist. But when I have had to do it last minute, I can feel who is waiting on me and who I have to follow.
Okay. So
interesting. Yeah,
it's a different kind of shift there.
Oh,
see, it's so much deeper than like anybody thinks about. It's just like, oh yeah, sing this and sound pretty. It's like, nope, it's like actually,
yeah, because they all make it look easy, and then you realize it's because they have had a lot of practice.
Which, okay, here's my beef. I have held this in since Trevor was on the show, and he made a call out to me about me hating the word talent. I do hate the word talent, because what you just said is exactly my point. It's all the training and all the practice and all the knowledge that you have that makes you appear that you are talented.
Mm-hmm.
I feel as though with the word talent, it discredits your work, and not discredits the person you're saying it to. It discredits those who are not at that point yet. So for example, one thing I always hear is like, oh, I'd love to do a show, but I can't. I'm just not talented. No, you have not gone through that uncomfortable growth that you, oh my goodness, it's tying back in. You have not gone back. You haven't gone through that uncomfortable growth and having those failures and those shortfalls that you need to be able to become to a certain point. And some people are not satisfied with the point that they get to, so they have to work even more. Yes, talent does exist. There is studies that are done based on the premise of nature versus nurture, specifically with music. So, for example, Alex, your musical ability starts at the conception of your mother. Because studies have been done that have proven that when you are playing music when a child is in the womb and developing, that it can enhance their music ability. To that credit, it also depends on where you are getting this music from. So, for example, if I am in the Western world in America, I am more drawn to certain tonalities than if I was in India, where they have a semitonal scale in their music. So where you are also dictates your music ability. So talent does exist in aptitude, but less in practice, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, it does make sense.
So I always like saying how a cast is so skilled, they're so thoughtful, they're so conscientious or hardworking. Those are the words I will go to before I go to the word talent, because talent dismisses the work.
I feel like the way I think about talent is like work ethic is half of what talent is.
Agreed.
Like, I think work ethic in itself is something you're born with or not. So, like, kind of a talent.
Ooh, that's interesting. Like, I was taught when I was in Fredonia by a fantastic professor, Dr. Jill Reese, that when we were learning about children's developments and the whole idea of nature versus nurture and the idea behind talent is that some people are born with a Ferrari, some people are born with a skateboard. Both people can get to the end destination. How long and the effort you need to put in dictates that.
Yeah.
Which ties back in exactly with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But no, that's interesting about how the whole work ethic plays a part.
And they, everyone in this cast is like, so when I say like, oh, they're all so talented, like I feel like
they work
and they worked all summer. They've been working it. So like, I think that's a huge part of them being talented, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is on my part from day one, I had people raise their hand saying, how many of you have either been in this show before, been in Phantom of the Opera, been in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, or just been in an opera or operetta, because it is a completely different beast than it is for a typical musical, because the music goes straight through.
Yes.
Even like, I was going to say Into the Woods is sort of like that, where it's so music heavy and that there's such little text. Sweeney is like that too.
Yeah.
It's completely different than doing like a Rodgers and Hammerstein show.
Right.
Because if I was on stage and doing Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, there is a lot of dialogue. There is a lot of downtime. There is a lot of acting and less purposeful movement. With Jesus Christ Superstar, you don't get that. You are on stage for the whole show singing. There is no written spoken text. There is like musical liberties to decide if I'm going to speak this line or sing this line.
Right.
But there is no intended part that you should not be singing. So the stamina you need to start building it from day one, and you need to start working.
Yeah.
And that's what this cast did. Like, they immediately knew my expectations of, you will be singing this all the way through. I will want harmonies in some spots. Like any show you do, you go in, you have your music rehearsal, you have the book in front of you, you're reading the music, and you're singing everything fantastic with the accompaniment, and you have the words in front of you, and you're feeling so confident. The moment you step foot on stage without the book in your hands, you lose everything. You forget the words, you forget your name.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a point where you decide, okay, what is worth saving and what's not worth saving. And we saved a lot more in harmonies than I thought we actually would. I was anticipating us getting unison for a lot of lines that they were singing instead of those beautiful harmonies. My favorite part of the show is, we have no king but Caesar. Oh, the power behind that.
Yeah, yeah.
The chord that they are making, the unification of the sound. Nobody stands out there. It is fantastic because of the work they put in. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's been a lot of work, and I've been very grateful to have you along, because obviously I don't know anything about music, and you were constantly there and constantly for them. Like, you got everything that you were saying and understood it from their perspective and mm-hmm. a director's perspective. So like, that's rare.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed this. I like, COVID hit and COVID took away so many things. I was off directing a show during COVID 2020, and I was also in a show. I was in 9 to 5, and that stopped, and immediately, like, I feel like theater world in general kind of crashed.
Yes.
And everybody has sort of had a rebirth where they are rebuilding their companies, they're rebuilding their rep, they're rebuilding what kind of shows they want to do and how they want to go forward with theater. And this has definitely been like an experience for me where I can return to something that I love doing, especially not being able to touch a piano for a year.
Yeah.
Like, once I quit teaching, I would sit at the piano ready to play, because I knew I had to play for interviews, and I couldn't play. I just couldn't bring myself to touch the piano because I left in such a state from my past job that I'm like, I don't know if I can do this ever again. So being able to go ahead and sort of get thrown into the music position the music directing position, kind of gave me the, again, universe push that I needed to be able to come back and re-hone some of my skills. I am not a good piano player. Everybody in the cast knows this. Like, there's been days where I'm like, where they're like, hey, Taylor, can we fix this one part? I'm like, yeah, but not today, because I can't play that. And I'm straightforward with them. But, like, this has given me an opportunity to start bringing back some of those skills that I really have, which I'm so thankful for. And
yeah.
I'm just, DJ, thank you so much for letting me re-exercise parts of my brain that I haven't been able to touch all year.
Well, thank you for doing it, because it was last, that's, I do everything kind of like just like on the spot, and like everything like that is in my mind kind of comes out of my mouth, and you were there, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know what, thank you, because I have been, we've been in a disco party. Alex just switched the lights. For those of you who have been in here, it has literally been flashing like we're in a nightclub.
And I just noticed. I'm like, oh, okay.
I noticed it about 10 minutes in, and I'm like, you know what? We're on a groove. Let's just keep going.
And I didn't notice at all.
Usually I don't. Like, sometimes we'll make it through the whole thing, and it's flashing like that. But it was like a nightclub in here.
It was.
Yeah, so like everything's just kind of on the spot. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to have a music director this summer, but I would love to work with you. And I was just like, that's a lot on you right now. So, like, you got to say no, you got to say no. But, like, I'm putting it out in the universe.
I think what happened was you came up to me and was like, hey, I don't know if our music director is available for auditions, but if you can just, like, sit in. And I'm like, I'm not even auditioning for the show. Yeah, DJ, I'll sit in. And immediately after saying, yeah, I'll sit in, I'm like, I know where this is going. And I had to, like, sit and think, is this something I actually want to do? Because, again, I was having that mental battle of,
right,
do I left teaching? I know that was my calling. Like, there is no doubt. I had that moment in my life. That was what I was meant to do. And I left it. So to go back to something that mirrors that was very odd. So I don't know why I keep shifting to Alex whenever I'm saying something serious. I'm like, fun things are directed at DJ. I look at Alex. So my life has fallen apart. And I'm trying to refine myself.
You can't take me seriously.
Okay. I feel the same.
Yeah.
But you chose, you made a difficult decision and you chose growth over it.
I know. It's coming back to that right there.
Come, you would everybody grow.
Grow, 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 grow.
Let it grow. Let it. Who's seen the, who's, what is that? The, with the one slur and the, oh my, the Lorax.
The Lorax. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the one slur so much. Yeah. That's a great, that's great. Like the original one, though. Like the
old Dr. Seuss,
yes,
hand-drawn.
Yep.
That's where, that is my favorite movie is How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Oh my
the
God.
The hand-drawn version. Anything after that that claims that they are the Grinch,
okay,
are lies,
okay,
because we, they don't just rhyme.
We're not getting back
if
into this.
You are not, if you are not rhyming in Dr. Seuss, you are not Dr. Seuss. You're a phony.
This just gave me life. This, you don't know what that just.
Yeah.
That,
how do you feel about Starbelly Sneetches?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, if you like hand-drawn Dr. Seuss, you gotta look up some Starbelly Sneetches.
Okay. I love Dr. Seuss. Like, I'd love to do the set for Seussical, but I never want to touch Seussical.
Oh, I'd want to touch Seussical.
I just want to do the set for it.
I would touch Seussical, not with a, what is it, 9.5-foot pole. I would touch it right on. I would love to do Seussical. At one point, I was at a different theater company, and I primarily did the children's shows because that was my rock. That was my jam. I eventually started doing the adult shows. I did some music directing for Beauty and the Beast and for Wizard of Oz with them. But when I was doing the kids' shows, we just got out of Shrek, and I'm like, hey, I know half of this cast are gymnasts. We need to do Seussical, because what kind of show that's a child show has kids flipping on stage? It's Seussical. This cast is so talented. We didn't do it. The next year we ended up doing The Lion King, which was fine. It was good. But like, damn, I wanted to do Seussical so badly, just because like I wanted my little gymnast flipping up the aisle while singing the Wickershire Brother song. I'm like, what could have been? Would have been amazing.
I love art. Like, I love that like Dr. Seuss is so recognizable. And like,
he's also very
Tim
controversial.
Burton. Very good. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like, I had like a whole mental like roller coaster with that too. I stopped teaching Dr. Seuss. Okay. Yeah, I stopped teaching that, like, in general. But I stopped teaching Dr. Seuss because I became aware of the conditions of which the art was portrayed and the negative connotations that came along with it, along with the perception and the intent behind it. The intent was the important part. Eventually, Dr. Seuss did come out and say how he regretted making certain choices. However, I feel like it's important that we still grow from things and we, like, educate ourselves of where things came from.
Yeah.
I hate to ruin this for people. Jingle Bells is not a good song. Like, Jingle Bells historically is not a good song. And it is written by an absolutely worst kind of person. But yet we still sing Jingle Bells. But we aren't educated on where that song came from and the conditions it was written under, and that it was originally performed as a minstrel show. So, you know, you got to start thinking about things, too. But that's my music education background kicking in. But Dr. Seuss, I had my own little, like, hurdle of, like, okay, I feel so emotionally attached to How the Grinch Stole Christmas, yes, and I love it so much. And then I thought, oh, well, Dr. Seuss didn't write the song. He wasn't the head animator on that. So it's at the point where things evolve past the person that they are, like, credited towards, too. Mm-hmm. Especially when we're in theater, all the behind-the-scenes stuff that you see, like, yeah, people come in, they sit down, they see the show, but they don't realize all the crew work that is behind the scenes of getting things ready, the building of the set, the painting of the set, all of those stairs that you see. It was Trista, right? Where she was up there spray painting and making it look rocked.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see that. It's credited in the bill, but, like, you go to the show and you remember mostly the leads and be like, oh my goodness, that one person was so great in that role of Jesus. I loved them. But you don't think about what had to happen for Jesus to be Jesus and right, all the support yeah, that happened. So.
No, that's really true. And, like, definitely true this year. Wednesday we went in and we painted the stage. I didn't end up leaving Wednesday after a full day of work. I didn't end up leaving till like 12:30. Will, Michaela and I did the floor in the basement. Wow. So it's like, it's not even the set. It's the building that we own. Mm-hmm. We did the flooring and then went upstairs and painted the floor of the set. And there was a lot. Callum was up working lights the whole time. Jenna was cleaning the green room. There's all the things. So much that goes into every ounce of the show that people yet don't know.
And the people who, like, are so reliable, you don't think about, like, the box office people.
Yep.
They are there.
Yep.
They just are like, when do we come? And they're ready to go, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many moving pieces to any work of art that it's, yeah, hard to credit it to one person.
Yeah.
What else? What else do we have to talk about?
How do you feel about first run through?
The audience is receiving it really well, from what I've seen and heard, so that's always exciting. You always want the audience to like it. So
I agree. I think the first week has been very good.
Yeah.
I've even heard cast members be like, man, I feel good about this. I feel confident about this. Normally when it's opening, like, we still have, like, some kinks to sort out, but, like, this feels good. And I'm like, good that this feels good, but don't get too comfortable.
Yeah.
You can't get comfortable on that stage, because then when you're getting comfortable, you're going to get complacent. You're going to become average. I didn't say it like that, but you know what? I should have.
I think Trevor brought that up yesterday. And I think he said it, you had said it before.
Shout out, Trevor.
Yeah. But he was like, yeah, when you start to think like, oh, I'm doing well, this is great, then you just sort of become complacent, and then that's where you lose yourself.
I have to take a phone call. You guys keep going, though.
Okay. Like, I had a band director who, like, helped sculpt my work ethic, and he, shout out Mr. Allen, but, like, he would have such high standards for us, and occasionally would, like, show really weird mood swings and bipolarism, where it's like, he'll be like, oh, that's fantastic, get it right, out of the blue. But he had a saying that stuck with me forever. It is that music is the relentless pursuit of perfection in an art form that does not allow it. So you are always constantly trying to be perfect. But because the structure of the beast is music, it is a man-created thing, it will never be perfect. Yo-Yo Ma, world-renowned cellist. He goes back to a Bach prelude that he learned when he was a child. And he will constantly replay it, and do it at performances because it's iconic. But also because every time he plays it, it is different. So he'll make different musical decisions and his emotions will impact how he plays it that day.
Oh, wow.
So the moment that anybody who is a musician starts thinking, I got this, that's worrisome. Like, you should never think, I got this. You should be confident in yourself. You should be confident in your skills and your abilities and your technique moving into this. Absolutely. But you should never run through the motions. You need to be, if you're feeling that this is something I'm confident in, your next step should be, how can I elevate past that?
Yeah.
So, like, very simple, broken down. If I am teaching a song, there's very certain steps that you should take before you even think about the emotion that you're putting into the song. Typically, it should go, you go over the song's rhythm. So I'd have people speak the rhythm if it's difficult, or have them just say it on a neutral syllable, like do or da. So if it's like happy birthday, I'd go da 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 da. I'd be like, no, you're a little short on one of those dots, let's redo it. Then you add the melody in, you add the notes. So happy birthday to you. Then from there, we're going to add a little bit more music spice. We're going to add the crescendos, the day crescendos, the fortes, the pianos, all that stuff. And then we'll maybe mess with the tempo a little bit. Maybe we'll do a little rallentando where we slow it down, or we'll do an accelerando where we move it faster. So until you get like those steps, then you can talk about emotion. And the emotions will inform if you're singing it quietly, if you're singing it loudly, if you're singing it faster or slower. And then from there, you have to evolve even further. And the whole time you're doing this, you have to think about your technique that you're doing it in, too. Because if you're making a decision emotionally that doesn't support technically, then you should not make that decision. Because if it's not going to sound or produce the effect you want, then don't do it.
Yeah. What I've learned, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but
That's right. You've been taking voice lessons.
Yeah. Well, from that and in general, just like art in general, you learn it how it should be learned, or like how it was first created. And then from there, once you learn that, you can make your creative choices.
Absolutely. That's the human element of it right there. And
microphone.
It keeps dropping. And I'm like, I'm supporting it. I'm like, I'm holding the cord. I'm making sure that it doesn't wiggle too much. But then every now and again, we get a squeak and it goes, and it just drops down. And I'm like,
Oh, it did it again.
Okay, I'm just going to hold it now.
Yeah, you can just hold it like this.
Exactly. I'm good. But no, the human element is such an important part when you are.
Well, also making it your own.
Yeah.
Not copying someone. But I feel like I think about instrumentalists and musicians differently, where I'm like, someone like Yo-Yo Ma, I would think that they would just replicate people from the past and not make it their own.
Ooh, this is interesting. So sometimes you want to, sometimes you don't. It also depends on the direction that you're getting. So for example, actually, I'm not going to give an example. forget that. But like, for Jesus Christ Superstar, the music direction and the general direction informed how we are going to put this on. It's the same way for if I was just doing a solo song, that if it is just me, I'm the director. So I'm making the decisions of how I want this to be portrayed. But if there is an outside eye, like a music director or a casting director or just a normal stage director, not normal, extraordinary stage director, then it's the job of them to communicate the intent that they want to be portrayed and the musician to make it come to life. So, yeah.
Well, because sometimes people put in their creative input on something that was made by someone else, and then people are like up in arms about them changing it up.
Oh my goodness. The people need to loosen up. Like, there's very few things that I think should keep pure and sacred, where you shouldn't change or try to keep it as historically accurate as possible. And like that is more so if like it's an education purpose and we want to keep it that way. But in general, like, don't take yourself too seriously. Yeah. Don't take the music too seriously, because if you're just, ugh, that's just boring.
I mean, it's art. It's not supposed to be perfect and
no
the same.
Okay, so I don't know if I talked about this last podcast I was on, but one of my favorite things that I ever learned was, like, the true origins of opera, and now, like, how we've evolved past, not evolved past that, but, like, shifted. So originally, opera was made so that way it was a community event where everybody would come, and you would have the lawn where the peasants would sit, and then you'd have tiered up based on rank, and everybody would bring a picnic. They'd be eating their food, they'd be talking while performing is going on. So people are on stage singing and performing and doing all this stuff, and people are talking over the performers, and they don't care about the plot because there's not really a plot. And then the person that they came to see gets on the stage, often singing a song that's unrelated to the opera, just because the song had to sound good. And then the audience would be quiet and listen to that one person, and then the person would leave the stage. And then they'd go back to doing whatever the hell they want, which is how we got the stereotype of throwing tomatoes at bad singers, because that would actually happen.
Wow.
People brought the picnics. So if anything was bad, they'd be like, I'm not into this. And that would be the peasants throwing stuff up there. It was basically like Beatlemania rock concert style. It was rowdy. It was unruly. This is pre-microphones, too, so they are singing in an operatic style, so you can be heard over the crowd, but man, was it not important. It was about a gathering of people, and now we're at this point where it's like, oh, yes, I need to grab my monocle because I'm going to the opera tonight. And it's so funny because, like, that is not what the roots of that was.
Yeah.
So how we got to
how
that
proper
point.
Proper we've got become.
I know. And then, like, there's the weird operas. Oh, my God. Shostakovich, a Russian composer, wrote an opera about a nose.
You told me about this last year, and I watched part of it.
You watched part of the nose?
Yeah.
How was it?
It was like the clips on YouTube.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
The giant paper mache nose running around the
stage?
Yes. Oh, yeah. People, you got to watch. Change your life. Look into like neoclassicism opera and the change of Russian music. It is hilariously insane, and I love it because it's so atonal and it doesn't hold on to a key, so it scratches your brain because we're not used to hearing those sounds, and it's like, wait, that fits, that shouldn't fit, why does it sound that way, it doesn't sound right, but it is right. And singing it is so bizarre and so fun. But for those of you who are not familiar with the nose, you know, for like the two people who don't know, it is an opera about Soviet Russia or USSR, where a diplomat wakes up one morning and his nose is missing. And lo and behold, his nose is running all around, making higher decisions in this government, and that is a politician or whatever, and people are just interacting with this nose with no idea that it's a nose and thinking it's a normal person. And this whole time, this guy's going around, is like, my nose, that's my nose, where's my nose? Hey, DJ came back at a perfect time.
It sounds
fantastic. Do you remember this?
What,
from last year, the nose opera?
Oh, I brought it back.
I don't remember.
Oh, every podcast I'm coming on now from here on out, I'm always going to bring up the nose somehow.
The nose. I don't know.
Coming,
I don't remember
to
that.
Starry Night Theater.
You have to watch season some clips.
Well,
it's insane.
That brings up an interesting question. Now that we're a team, we're working together, what are musicals that you don't want to do?
Oh, musicals I don't want to do.
I've got some. I'm
South Pacific.
To hear yours.
I have no interest in South Pacific. It's too long. It's drawn out. It has, like, the only song that I'm, like, interested in that is Valley High. But, like, South Pacific, not for me. And I love Richard Rodgers. I go back to, like, the golden age of musical a lot. I love it. I think that's something we need to revisit more and more as we're entering this contemporary moment in musical theater. Because redoing those shows, they're so story-driven that doing it in a contemporary style would be fun. But I would not do South Pacific. I have no interest in South Pacific. Wow, I can't believe I hate on South Pacific that much, but I can't really think of another one. Because I'm pretty open to do a lot of shows.
I don't want to do Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, I love Fiddler. I have such a soft spot in my heart for Fiddler. Like, as a child, I had a music box, and it played Fiddler on the Roof, Sunrise, Sunset, and I never knew it was Fiddler on the Roof. And now as an adult, I'm like, wow, that's Fiddler on the Roof. No, I think it's such a beautiful story. It's also another divisive one. I think that it's one that, like, as you age... Bless you.
Thank you.
As you age... Like, I didn't like Fiddler when I was younger. And then as I aged, I grew more with the story.
Okay.
So it might be one that you don't like now, but come back to it in, like, 5 years.
Okay.
Because it's different. And, and they were just doing an all-Yiddish version of it.
Whoa.
Wow.
Which I thought was incredible. Like, I was seeing clips of it on TikTok. Shout out TikTok my whole life. and the cast singing all the songs in Yiddish. I knew what they were singing because I'm very familiar with the show, but it had a whole different feeling. Same thing, like, when they did Spring Awakening with an all-deaf cast. And
they did that?
They did that, where it was an all-deaf cast, and the performers of the characters, they were signing the whole time, and they had voices, like there was a mirror in the middle of the stage or something like that, and they would have somebody singing for them.
Wow.
That's not the only time that there's been inclusion in theater. Like Hunchback of Notre Dame, Quasimodo, there was a version of it where a gargoyle was Quasimodo's voice, and Quasimodo was deaf.
Yes.
So he was signing the whole time. Like, I thought that was a brilliant rendition of that show. I also think that, like, when you're listening to Hunchback of Notre Dame, I don't like how they change Quasimodo's voice to be all like, Quasimodo, it's all raspy. That was a very bad imitation of it. But I'm like, just because he's deformed does not mean that his vocal cords are deformed and that his innards are deformed. Like, right. He definitely has some other health issues going on there, but we don't need to alter his voice also. Like, especially if you're going to come out and belt in such a beautiful tone afterwards. That's just a weird juxtaposition there.
I think I like it to the extent of, like, okay, like, a lot of this is, like, in his head. Like, this is what he would sound like in his head. But, like, I do agree they go way too far where it's like, come on.
So besides Fiddler on the Roof, what's a show you wouldn't want to do?
Lion King. I love Lion King, but, like, it's just...
Lion King's fun.
Like, I would love the set. I would love the props. I would love making all the puppet stuff. But I think it's very important that you have the right cast for it, and I don't think we have that.
All right, so that's something important. Like, there's some shows that I will never do. And then there's shows that I feel like I should not do.
That's it. That's a show I feel I should not do.
Like, there are very specific shows that should not be done unless you have the perfect cast.
Absolutely.
And also the right directors. Mm-hmm. Because if I was directing directing Ragtime, I might be able to get away with it. But if I was directing Hairspray, no. I should not be the one directing Hairspray because I cannot create a vision of it that would do that story justice.
Right.
So.
West Side Story is another one.
I don't think I would want to direct that one. There's shows that I'm very much more open into directing, but there's also shows on my list that, like, I'd rather be in than direct.
Right.
So, like, as much as I would love to direct Avenue Q, I want to be in there. Like, even as one of, like, the little bears that come out and say the most vile things. Like, I would do that in a heartbeat.
That's a tough one, Avenue Q. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else. I'm sure there are more that I'll think of as the day goes on that I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to touch that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think.
Well, I think that's also, like, it's harder to think of things you don't want to do.
Yeah.
Because, especially with musicals, you have a playlist that you go back to in your favorites, and every now and then you'll rotate something new in there and you'll spice it up a little, or there's a new re-release that inspires you. But when you don't like something, you don't go back to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that you go back to it. And if you do, something I hated for a long time was How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Hated it. Shout out Daniel Radcliffe for changing my mind. Damn, he did a fantastic job.
His dancing's phenomenal, man.
That's what sold me.
Yeah.
The whole Brotherhood of Man breakdown, where he is going ham.
Yes, he is.
I stole one of the little arm things he does in like the V. I put it in the Herod girl number because I'm like, I love this. We're gonna do it there.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. All right. So then, maybe last question: What are two shows that you really do want to do? Like, dream, even if it's not achievable, dream shows that you would want to direct or be in.
I want to be in Spamalot. I love it. I love the comedy. I love comedies and the cheesiness that can go there.
Yeah.
Because comedies, I think, play an important role in theater. Because you can still send in a very important message, but do it in a way that's lighthearted. Because one I would love to direct is Cabaret.
Okay.
I would love to get my hands on that. I've come to the point in my life where I realized I am no Sally Bones. I cannot do that role. But I think I could direct that. I think I could really dig into that. I did a private study with a professor very briefly on the music of the Holocaust and the impact it played and how it actually mirrored very similarly to the music that we saw evolve in America during the time of slavery.
Right.
Because when people would be traded from plantation to plantation, you would have music travel with that person. And we all know about the different songs that hit hidden messages in the Underground Railroad. Same thing for the Holocaust. So when people were getting moved from concentration camp to concentration camp, the music would travel with them as well. And there was one song in particular that there was a Jewish composer who was not commissioned, but told, you have to write this song so the musicians will play it, because every working camp, every concentration camp had musicians. They did that as a way to help, I'm doing air quotes here, motivate people to work and make it seem like there was some sense of humanity there. But there was a song that was commissioned where it was supposed to be in favor of what the Third Reich was doing. However, it got transformed and there became hidden messages inside of it as sort of a screw you message.
Right.
Which I like having the idea of sneaking that into the different music in the backing tracks of different scenes for Cabaret, just so that way, because Cabaret, if you're not familiar with it, it's one of those shows that I feel like you should not go in knowing anything about the show.
Right.
That way when it hits, it hits. Mm. I feel like there's a point where Wikipedia has gone too far, where we are giving the whole plots of too many shows out there, because my mom's a big my mom does this. She'll go on, she'll read Wikipedia so she knows what the show's about before going into the show.
Right.
Which can automatically, it will shape your opinion of the show before you go in, and it will also stop you in some places from really feeling the gravity. So Cabaret is one of the shows that I feel like nobody should see before they go in, and Come From Away is another one of those shows that I feel like you should have no context before you go in. Come From Away is another show that I would like to direct.
That is
it's beautiful.
That's that. Come From Away and Once are my two dream shows.
Once is good.
I love Once. Seeing Once live, because I've listened to the soundtrack, but seeing it live is so different.
That's how I felt about Spring Awakening. Spring Awakening live, it was like the room vibrated.
Yeah.
I always wanted to see that.
It's intense. I saw it when UB put it on. Wow. And I saw it at the perfect age, too. I was a senior in high school still feeling that angst and that.
Yeah.
Oh, all those songs were playing on repeat on my iPod. It was, there was some
mine, too.
Angst
there. I remember when it came out with Rachel, or whatever her name is. I don't know.
Lea Michele.
Lea Michele. There we go. Not Rachel from Glee. And then Jonathan Groff.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be in it so bad at that age.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That show. So important for development and so heavy.
Yeah, it is.
Well, did we do it? Is this it? We're at an hour 20.
And 20 minutes of that is talking about shoes.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
All right, come to Jesus Christ Superstar. We have one more weekend after today for performances left. Come see it. The cast has worked their butts off. Taylor and I have worked our butts off. Mm-hmm. Callum worked his butt off. It's really impressive. It's an impressive, impressive show, I think, to come and sit and watch and be a part of for the hour, however long it is. It's not long.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big selling point.
It's not long. You get the music. You get some snacks. You get some more music. And you get out. It's great.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's all anybody wants in life, I feel. Thank you, Taylor, for coming on.
Yes,
and thank you for being my music director.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And this cast has made it so enjoyable, too. Like, they've made my summer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they came in. They worked hard. Mm-hmm. And they have a good attitude. So.
That they do.
All right, Alex, anything you got?
No.
No.
Come see the show.
Come see the show.
Come see the star, Alex, as guard number, let's say three.
Yeah, three.
Five, six,
out
four.
Out of six.
All right, thanks, guys, for listening. Follow us on social media at Starry Night, Starry Night Theater on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, TikTok. We're out there. All right.
See you next time.
See you next time.